Thanks for waiting and being patient with us. We had this time of the year already in a 90-day session. We have members dueling for time slots, and so I appreciate you having patience for us. I'm Senator McGuire, as you know, and with me this morning is Senator Peter Machicki and Senator Kathy Geisel and Senator Click Bishop. And we're honored to have some time. We are going to, at your request, save the majority of the time for you to ask the questions that you want of us. So we're going to take just about 5 minutes. And what we've chosen, because we're only going to take such a limited time to tell you what we want. We have lots of things we'd love to tell you, of course. But we have decided to just focus on the oil bill and give you an update on what has happened with that bill since we have two of the key leaders on that issue here today, and then let you ask questions. So I'm going to turn it over to Senator Geisel first to tell you about the bill itself, what it looks like, and the timeline, and then over to Senator Peter Machicki to talk about some of the structural elements in terms of the progressivity of it. So, Kathy?
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Well, the Resources Committee has rolled out a committee substitute on Friday with some very innovative improvements in the bill. One of them was an expansion of the gross revenue exclusion to include legacy fields, and also the opportunity, even in some other fields, to enlarge the participating areas. In other words, going after, using new technology, harder to reach oil deposits. That was something that Senator McGuire had been particularly interested in, is how we would acknowledge improved technology. There were several cleanup things that we did, enlarging the areas that can be considered for wells, removing some of the barriers. We've also advanced the exploration incentive credit. And we've included a couple really great things, I think. One of them is the competitiveness review panel. This would be a non-political group. Again, one of the brain children of Senator McGuire, who has certainly been working on these issues for a long time, understanding that even though we are going to alter the petroleum tax structure this year, the job is never done because we live in a dynamic world. And to have a professional group always looking at what the dynamics look like around the world and Alaska's place in that competitive structure would be a real help to the legislature as we make policy. And the last one I particularly like, and Senator Bishop has been a real advocate, of course, for Alaska Hire, and it was an issue that came up in the last legislature when I served on the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. That is, are Alaskans being employed to the maximum opportunity on the North Slope? So in this committee substitute, we have a tax credit on corporate income tax for here in Alaska, companies that pay Alaska corporate income tax for Alaska manufacturing. That is durable goods produced here on Alaska soil that are used in the oil and gas industry. So this not only promotes those businesses' prosperity, their robust economics, but of course advocates Alaska Hire, because these will be companies here in Alaska. They can be an outside company, that is perhaps an international company, but the manufacturing, the factory and the manufacturing itself has to be in Alaska soil, used either on our North Slope, or it can be an exported product. I think of Dahlenbach, for example, that does oil field controls. I read an article recently about how they're shipping those overseas. They are supplying the world with these controls. So this would help foster additional Alaska Hire. Now, there's another element in the committee substitute, and it's what we call the 35-5. We increased the base tax rate, and I'm going to let Senator Machicki talk about that. It was one of the particular concerns that he had with the governor's bill. Senator Machicki?
Thank you, Senator. You know, first off, what I'd like to say is I really like where we've gone with the bill. I had some concerns with Senate Bill 21. I think the result we have now is an artful blend of balanced, slightly progressive tax, incentives for large and small producers of new oil, and encouragement for Alaska purchase, along with the non-political review board. So a lot of the things that we felt were missing through the process are now a part of it. One of the key issues I had and shared with many on the TAPS committee and as we came to this point was the fact that the tax was slightly regressive and was actually a tax increase for producers on the low end, which was a concern. You know, and we listened to hundreds of concerned Alaskans. We listened to the administration, we listened to the agencies, and we listened to the producers, both large and small, both an important piece of where Alaska is going for future production. And what we arrived at, we looked at some bracketing, which made sort of a jagged tax that would make it not necessarily simple, as the governor wisely is striving for. So what we did is we used the 35-5 rule, and it's a 35% base tax. These are the comparisons from the Econ 1 study of the two curves. Originally, producers were concerned that it was a dramatic tax increase on the low end, and then Alaskans were concerned that it was regressive on the high end. It was a lower share for Alaskans on the high end. So what we strived to do was to flatten that line with a slightly progressive curve. And the way to do that, if you think about the $5 per barrel credit, it has a greater impact at a lower cost of oil and a lesser impact at the higher end of the price spectrum. So it flattens the line with a slightly progressive line across the board. What I like about it, I don't believe in reducing taxes below what we feel is competitive. I think it's a fair competitive rate, and as we heard with the producer testimony the other day, you start feeling a little resistance from them. I think that's the right place to be. But I personally, here's the bottom line for me. I think we have a young state with nothing but a bright future in front of us. ACES wasn't working. We've heard suggestions from our brothers and sisters across the aisle that they now agree that ACES wasn't working. And I think we're all at the table trying to find solutions for a bright future for our kids and grandkids. Writing it down the way ACES was functioning was not working well for Alaskans. And I think where Senate Bill 21 is today meets the constitutional requirement to produce our resources for the maximum benefit of Alaskans.
Excellent. Thank you, Peter. And one other just little last thing that I want to do. I was asked to promote this today. I want to promote this today quickly. This is a benefit for the Wounded Warriors. This is Wednesday night at the Hangar Ballroom. This is to help connect a returning veteran with their children on a hunting or fishing trip in Alaska. And these are our own Senator Pete Kelly, who's our co-chairman of the Finance Committee of the Operating Budget, Representative Dan Sadler, John Bitney, Paul Foos, and Brian Adizik, and with a special guest star on the electric guitar, General Pat Gamble. So I just want to let you all know, if you want to go down there 6:30 to 10 this Wednesday night to donate to the Wounded Warriors. And so with that, we'll take questions from you guys. Lisa.
Lisa Deemer, Anchorage Daily News. And I had a couple of questions related to legislative travel. So I'll just ask one, and then I would like to follow up on that. So just first of all, with what you all usually call the energy break coming up next week, I'm wondering who in the Senate majority is going to D.C. for the Energy Council meeting. And if you've gone in the past or expecting to go this time, what public benefit occurs from your travels?
Absolutely. So we've got a list that we're making in the office. I know Senator Geisel and myself are going. Senator Coghill is going. Senator Wilikowski is going. Senator Gardner is going. Senator Ellis is going. Senator Olson is going. Those are the ones I know right off the top of my head. But I'm happy to provide you a list of the members that are going. Some of those members, most of those members have gone in the past. Of course, if there's a freshman on the list, then they wouldn't have gone in the past. But Energy Council has been, Bert Stedman, of course, is going. He's the chairman. And so this is a particularly big Energy Council for Alaska this year. We're honored to have a president for the first time since Drew Pierce. And so we are all there to support Bert in his presidency. And the theme this year is the Arctic. And so we are honored to have some presentations on the Arctic that are particularly important to us. Energy Council is an opportunity to learn from other jurisdictions about their best practices, their tax structure, their best practices with respect to drilling policy. And then it's also a time for us to meet with our delegation to coordinate efforts with Lisa and Mark and Don. And then we go over always and make a trip to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And this year in particular, we'll be talking to them about SUSTNA to ensure that that permit is carried through. We've had a few bumps in the road on that. In years past, it's been on gas line issues, but the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, we want all five of those commissioners that are a little bit like judges to know who we are as lawmakers. And then the other thing that we always do is go in and meet with the Department of the Interior. It's been Kim Melton in the past, now it's Pat Pershow. And then this year I've asked for a meeting at the White House for a group of us. Kathy and I and Senator Olson sit on what is called the Arctic Commission, the Alaska Arctic Commission. And we will be starting, we'll be holding our first meeting tomorrow. And one of the goals that we have is to draft recommendations to the State Department to give to the Arctic Council. The United States of America will be chairing the Arctic Council for the first time in many, many years. Canada will take it here in May, and then the United States will take it 2 years after that. We want the Arctic Council to have a local perspective on governing the Arctic. And so we're hoping to get in with Steve Rausch, who, as you know, is a former Alaskan. And we're hoping that we can get their attention. So far, Senator Kerry has not been to the Arctic, and neither has our president. So we're hoping that we might convince them to come. And Senator Giesel.
Could I just add something, yes. Senator McGuire? These meetings are extremely productive, and Senator McGuire has really outlined some of it. I also have been joining with the Energy Producing States Coalition. This is a group of Western states that produce energy for our country. And as you know, the federal government these days is not appreciating our national energy production. And so one of the things that the Energy Producing States Coalition members and I are going to meet with the Western Caucus leadership of Congress, that particular caucus, and talk to them about how we can amplify our voice about the potential that we offer our nation in terms of energy. So that will fit beautifully with what Senator McGuire has also outlined.
Follow up just on legislative travel. Just generally from last year, I just look quickly at some of the travel records, and both Senator McGuire and Senator Giesel had a good bit of travel. A lot of it connected with some of these groups you've mentioned, including PENWAR and other groups. But there are a lot of trips all over the country, and I'm just wondering if you could address those some. Why so many trips? It's at public expense. And is there anything you can highlight there? And then separately for Senator McGuire, on what happened with the Iceland trip?
Thank you, Lisa. So, you know, I think what we try to do in the legislature, I've been in the bottom part of travel and the top part of travel, and members have been in the bottom and the top. And the standard, you know, for every member is, you know, is this a trip? Is this an opportunity that is going to give back to Alaska? Am I going to learn something that will make me a better lawmaker and bring something back? And that's the standard I always use. I'll let other members speak for themselves. I've been the president of PENWAR, been the president of Council of State Governments, and so there is travel associated with it. And in every case that I have taken times out of Alaska, I've either had the opportunity to teach somebody about my great state, or to learn something about their great state or their great jurisdiction and bring it back home. And it's been an honor. I still think about the friendship that I made with my good friend Mike Schaffler from Oregon, who then, as a result, came up here to Alaska on a PENWAR conference and went up to visit the North Slope. And he's a Democrat out of Oregon. We share a lot of love for the labor community, and he was anti-development, 100%. He got up on the North Slope and got a chance to see how we did it. And, you know, he came back from that. We talked that night, and he said, "Liesl, I'm absolutely a firm believer in development in Alaska. I think you guys do it well." And it changed his viewpoint. And there are many more stories like that. With respect to Iceland, I ended up not going on that trip. And so they have forwarded my conference fee for that as a credit for another trip with the Institute of the North. Others did go on that trip and I think benefited from it. I had already been to Iceland. Somebody had paid for me to go when I was president of Council of State Governments. But I know other people went and I think really benefited from it. So.
Yes, I'd like to comment on that also, Senator McGuire. You know, one of the things that I read in many of your publications and I hear from some folks is, you know, Alaska's legislators don't really know what's going on. They're not informed. Citizen legislators. Well, these conferences are our professional conferences. This is where we learn broader issues, the complexity of issues that we face here. I'm a nurse practitioner, and as a healthcare professional, I have a job that I do. This is not my job, but I actually have another job. And a critical element of my professional expertise is attending conferences around the United States, participating in national committees and panels. And so that's how we enrich what we do and our knowledge base here. Actually, Alaskans should be thrilled that their legislators participate on a national level at all of these meetings.
Peter?
I had a couple of just peripheral issues to add to that. I mean, the legislature is the board of directors of the state of Alaska, and we want them to be the best informed they can be. And I'm a guy that doesn't like to travel and doesn't like to spend money. I don't happen to be going to Energy Council this time, but if there's an opportunity to do a better job representing Alaskans, I will likely take that opportunity. And two key issues I want to talk about Washington, D.C. One is we've spent a lot of time, and we believe that we've gotten the chair of the Energy Committee, Senator Wyden, to change his thoughts on exporting LNG. He speaks about those issues separately now, separating Alaska from the rest of the lower 48. That is a key issue for Alaskans. If LNG exports are not allowed from this state, we will not have a natural gas pipeline, which is key not only to Alaskans for lowering their costs here, but to add another product line, if you will, to have Alaskans make their living. The second issue is the offshore Arctic production, our share of OCS revenue. Essentially, we get nothing other than lowering the tariff in our pipeline. We'd like to negotiate, since we have impacts to Alaskans for producing and moving that oil to market, we'd like to negotiate for a similar share as the shares of Gulf of Mexico states. And those are key Washington, D.C. things that our legislators need to look those folks in the eye and let them know how important it is to Alaskans.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yes, right here.
Adam Pinsker with KTUU. I wanted to switch gears to public safety. Senator McGuire, how far do you think the obligation of a youth coach, whether it's a volunteer or paid, has... How far does our obligation go to report suspected signs of abuse among children?
Thank you very much. And I if you're following the debate in the Judiciary Committee, the governor has proposed that we expand the section of our statutes in mandatory reporting. And I feel very strongly that include volunteer and paid coaches. First of all, the athletic community is made up of a whole lot of volunteers, and so it's important if we really want to get at that particular solution of intervening early in abuse for kids that you do cover volunteers, because that is the bulk of the personnel in that particular area. So if you narrow it down to the paid personnel, you're really not going to attack the particular problem. What I said yesterday on the record, and I mean, is that statute, when you read it, the point of that statute is to put Alaska's kids first. That we say that early intervention, everything that we know about it, to save lives and souls for Alaskans is the goal of that chapter. And so if there are reasonable signs of physical and sexual abuse, we're asking someone not to investigate. We don't ask people to be professionals, but we do ask them to report that reasonable suspicion onto someone who is a professional and then let that work continue. And that may save a life, and that may save a soul.
If I may, this just extends just to folks in that arena, volunteer coaches, is it any other kinds of volunteering, or just in the...
No.
Okay.
No, it's in that area. Certainly the recent activities of Penn State, I know, prompted a lot of the governors, including that language. And so you can look at it from two different perspectives, and I said that yesterday. One would be signs of abuse on a child that come from inside a family unit or outside a family unit. Often it is the coaches and the volunteers that see our children more often than parents. I mean, frankly, in the Boys and Girls Clubs after school, those are the first on the line, if you will, responders to our kids. And if they do see those signs and our children are being abused by other neighbors or friends or other family members that we're not aware of, certainly we want to know that. That's one way. The second would be, what if that volunteer is seeing signs of abuse from a coach? And that would be the circumstance in the Penn State circumstance. And I think someone asked me the other day, they said, why do we have to require this? I mean, why wouldn't a person simply report? And the answer is complex. In society, because I say to myself, I would absolutely report it. But sometimes people feel like they don't want to be involved. Sometimes people feel like there's a culture that says you shouldn't. Maybe it might bring down an athletic institution. Maybe it might cause problems. And so putting that in the law might be the one thing that they say, well, it's the law, I have to report. And that might save that child's life. And so that's the reason why I support it. And I would just simply say this one last comment, which is that I don't believe that there's a volunteer out there that truly cares about kids that would say, well, then I won't volunteer if I have to report reasonable signs of sexual abuse and physical abuse. And I won't volunteer.
No, thank you. Frank Amaduri, Alaska Budget Report. I just had two quick questions for Senator Giesel. First, I was wondering, when did the committee start working on the CS for SB 21?
Well, thanks for the question, Frank. The committee has been working on the oil tax bill for about 4 weeks. Now, we formally received the bill on February 11th, but we had about 2 weeks of informational meetings beforehand. Several committee members served on the previous committee that held the bill. That was the TAPS Throughput Committee. And, of course, you saw that letter of intent that came from them. As soon as we got the bill and began hearings, of course, our members, being experienced in this subject matter, you'll note that about 70%, 71% actually, of our committee members, five of the seven, have been experienced in this subject matter for several years. They began thinking of ideas and writing down and submitting, and discussions were going on. Even you heard them in committee. These are some of the concerns. So we began working on our ideas from the get-go.
What I'm wondering is, when did you decide you would do a CS rather than go by the amendment process in committee?
Well, that was a committee chair decision. We had great ideas that all of us seemed to agree to, so I put them into a committee substitute.
When did you do that? Is what
you're trying to get. I couldn't give you an exact date, Frank. I'm not sure that there was a light bulb moment.
I'm just curious because on Thursday evening at 4:45 when we talked, I asked you if you were going to do a committee substitute or if you were going to do it by amendment in committee, and you indicated that you weren't sure yet. And I'm just curious to know why you weren't comfortable mentioning that you already had a CS in process.
I don't recall that specific question, Frank. I know you tape recorded it, and so it is on a record somewhere because you're very diligent that way. I don't recall that you asked me that specific question. I believe you asked me when some kind of committee substitute or amendments would be coming out, and that I wasn't sure of on Thursday evening.
Okay. Well, you guys can follow up on that.
Yes, we can debate that another time.
There is a CS. We know that. Yes.
I forget. Alaska Dispatch. Pat Forgey, Alaska Dispatch. Wonder if either Senator Machiki or Giesel could talk about why you would expand the gross revenue exclusion to Prudhoe Bay, which is the largest oil field in the United States, and what's your thinking there?
Well, Pat, as you read the committee substitute, you will see that the expanded gross revenue exclusion requires that the oil be new. Okay, we expanded the participating area opportunity. And so it has to be documented by the producer that this is oil that was not already in the works to be produced. We know that you go for oil where you know the oil is, and that's our legacy fields. That's the most rapid place that, oil could be obtained to decrease our or to raise our throughput in TAPS, decrease the decline. So that was why.
And Peter wants to add, Senator Machiki?
If I can just add to that, I mean, we realize that the most likely place for, so we have, there'll be a fiscal note to this. It's been reduced with the increase in the base tax rate, but we know there'll be some impact to the budget, and we know that the quickest oil for new production is likely going to be in field. So the way that it's set up is if they can prove it's new oil, as the senator said, we believe it's the most likely source of the earliest reduction in the decline, and we'll likely turn this picture around sooner. We'd like to see a curve that looks like Texas or California or North Dakota, and we believe that's the most likely method to get us there sooner.
What's your thinking on the need? What's your thinking on the need for a reduced tax rate to spur the production? Has there been any testimony that will work in that area, there's undeveloped oil there that could be developed with that?
We heard considerable testimony about the cost of developing heavy, viscous, and the extended directional drilling. If you've ever looked at what the technology is involved in this higher technology drilling, the cost is evident.
Actually, and I think some of the best testimony came from Doug Smith with Little Red Services and the Support Industry Alliance. He's the president there. He came down, and that was one of his first concerns about the bill, is he said, you know, for new oil in outside of Prudhoe Bay, this is great. But he said, you know, one of the most promising things for Alaska right now to get oil into the Trans-Alaska pipeline is to go right where it is, but go deeper, go off to the sides, go into different parts of the existing well structure using technology that the Support Industry Alliance has developed, their partners. And his concern was that the bill wasn't going far enough to incentivize that existing field, the big field, the Prudhoe Bay field that we've already discovered. So the committee was responding directly to testimony from those on the ground. And in point of fact, Kathy and some other members traveled up and saw this technology, this coiling that's going into existing wells right now and pulling out this oil. And yes, the testimony has been that there is a rate of return that oil companies look at where they make a decision about whether they're going to take on a project. And they'll only go so far. And if you can make it more profitable for them, they'll go back into that well and go farther to pull out more oil. And that's what we're hoping to do.
All right. Can I just a quick follow-up on that, which, Jane, one of the things I want to just briefly talk about is that the contrast between ACES and Senate Bill 21, the CS particularly. You know, ACES provided credits that didn't deliver. I mean, people like to use the word guarantees. The GREs reward new oil, which is the closest you're going to get to a guarantee that this is going to be effective to increase production. ACES paid for anything. So as opposed to paving runways, which are not likely to result in new oil, these GREs are directly will be directly responsible for new investment that will theoretically reduce the decline of North Slope oil production.
And I'm going to keep going just a little bit because we started late. So Becky.
Becky Borth, the Associated Press. First, when might we see that bill come out of committee, the oil tax bill? And second, to Senator Machiki, you said that you really like where the committee has gone with this bill, as it goes to the next committee, are there other issues or concerns that you think still need to be addressed to that haven't been addressed yet in your committee?
Well, I'm going to pass well, first of all, I want to say I do like the direction of the bill. As I talked about early on, I was not supportive of the earlier Senate Bill 21. I didn't like the regressive nature of the bill. I didn't think there was quite – I think we were below competitive. That's not where I want to be. I want to reduce the impact on our budget and the things that are important to Alaskans as well. So I think this is the best bet for ensuring that we have a long-term place in the oil business in Alaska. As far as the items that aren't going to be dealt with in this committee, I support the bill in its current form. None of us may support it as it moves forward. We're not sure what's going to happen in the committee process. We've taken hundreds of hours that we've invested talking to hundreds of Alaskans, the producers, the agencies, the administration, the people that matter most to us, Alaskans. And we think that we've made this a better bill that meets the requirements of what we heard from those that testified before us. The other committees will do the same. We'll see what they come out with right now. And I said this kind of tongue-in-cheek the other day. I think we've set the table for increased production. We've set the table for the producers, and it's their responsibility to show up for dinner. But we'll see what happens with the bill later. We plan on putting a letter of recommendation, and I'm not sure where the chair is on that letter, but I'm going to pass it off to Senator Giesel for that.
Who is the chair?
Senator Giesel.
Becky, you asked when the bill will be coming out. I believe, actually, it will emerge from the Resources Committee tomorrow, Wednesday. We meet again. We heard 4 amendments last night. We also heard testimony from various groups responding to the committee substitute. And we held our 3rd opportunity for public comment in the evening after our meeting. So we've thoroughly vetted the bill, and we're ready to move it on. I will be, as the chair, sending forward a letter of intent with some additional elements that we didn't have an opportunity to address, or they were outside the jurisdiction of the Resources Committee. You know, we brought up some fiscal issues, which is unavoidable when you're talking about a tax bill, but they're really specifically addressed in finance. So we'll be sending those thoughts on to the Finance Committee. Though I will point out that Senator Anna Faircloth has sat on Resources Committee. She was also on the TAPS Throughput Committee, and she is a member of Senate Finance. So I think she'll be able to well present the ideas that have been talked about.
Okay, I'm going to give the last opportunity here and then wrap up. Mike Mason from in Dillingham with KDLG Radio, and Shaylin Cochran in Kenai with KDLL. Do either of you have any questions? I'll go to Mike first and then Shaylin, just because you're listed that way. Or Shaylin, my apologies. Mike, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much. With KDLG Public Radio in Dillingham. I know that the piece of legislation I'm going to refer to, which is House Joint Resolution 10, and there are several other associated pieces of resolution, to create a transportation infrastructure fund. It was introduced in the House, but this is a concept that has been around for many years, and I thought perhaps I could have you all give me your thoughts about a dedicated fund constitutionally mandated to deal with transportation in the state of Alaska.
I'll take this one and then see if these guys have thoughts. Yes, this, I know Peggy Wilson's been hard at work on this one for a couple of years. In short, I do support it. I do think that this is one area where, because you do have the gas tax and other things that go into it, having a fund for transportation projects dedicated is a good idea. I think that we are such a young state, 54 years old, we still don't have the kind of infrastructure that we really do need. It not just roads to resources, but all of us in terms of connectivity between our communities. So I personally like the idea. And I'll turn it over to Kathy next and see what she has to say.
Thanks, Senator McGuire. I think as we look at the federal fiscal cliff, the sequestration that is likely to occur, we have to begin to be able to stand up on our own 2 feet in terms of issues like transportation. We are a young state. I saw a map today in State Affairs concerning the roads we have in Alaska. We have less miles of roads in Alaska than the state of Connecticut has. This is a significant need. I think this transportation fund is a great idea, and I fully support it.
Senator Michiki?
I don't have much other than we are a young state, and we've got generations of a bright future ahead of us, and certainly need a pool to tap from to not only increase accessibility to our lands, but one of the concerns I have is I think a lot of the roads, Department of Transportation does a great job, but the standard of a lot of our roads are that of the third world. And yes, if we want to reduce our accident rates and ensure the safety of Alaskans that travel on those roads, then I believe the Transportation Infrastructure Fund is a good way to get there.
Another good point. Okay, and then I'm going to go to Shailen with our last question here, and then we'll let you guys go. In Kenai.
Yes, thank you, Shailen Cochran with KDLL. This is for Senator Michiki. From your perspective, as someone who's been in the industry for a number of years, and we're seeing the BP trial just now get underway, wondering about your thoughts on the ability of some smaller operators around the state, specifically Cook Inlet, to handle financially the potential for some of the problems that could arise, and also if you think the state should have different or better standards regarding those liabilities.
Well, Shailen, that's a good question, and you've probably heard me talking about this in the past. One of the things that I want us to be very careful of, and we're one of the items we're passing forward in our letter of intent, is a level of qualification of those looking to extract the resources of Alaska. I think it's key that they have a record of success and the pockets necessary, you know, God forbid that there is an incident. It's key. It's key to our success. When you look at, you know, Shell's a great company. They did a great job. They had a mishap, and I do believe in their program, but things do happen, and we need to make sure that in the rare occasion that there are, hopefully, events that stay manageable and small, that we have the right people that can respond. So there's two ways to deal with that. One is that we make sure that the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation's ability to respond continues to be adequately funded, and that we make sure that we, as stakeholders, remain involved in the sea planning of the response planning of these companies, so that we feel they have the ability to respond as well. But ultimately what it comes down to is you want to make sure that your incentives also have a clause that requires that companies have an ability to perform and that they have a record of performing, so that we do, we don't want to draw just anyone. We want to draw the best companies that we can trust to take care of our natural resources and the reasons that most Alaskans live here, and it's our beautiful natural resources.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys so much for coming, and have a great day.